This is Slime Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 34, where I talk with Roses about her poem, Gray. I hope you enjoy.
Hi, I'm Roses, and I'll be reading my poem, Gray. I've learned to interpret silence. My mind splutters on the verge of an idea and once again disappears into the abyss. An ocean cannot freeze. Sometimes I wish it would. Enthralled by mysteries, the intoxicating paradox of my mind brings extreme hilarity. Do I strive to become another Daphne or let this perplexity lead? I live in stacks of books with no more room on the painted bookshelf. White polished furniture built my habitat. My poems are full of obscure imagery. I seem to be a nomad with a single destination. Iceland engulfs my eyes. Mountain arched brows trace my unspoken thoughts. My wind-knit face slowly softens as the day disappears. The eerie irony of my unfinished masterpieces goes unspoken. Deja vu is some form of manifestation for me, blindly hinting as I watch in amusement over coffee and scribbled shopping lists. Every night I fall asleep to the rattle of the subway and the skeletal murmur of the city. And I rue the day when impulse will leave me, just as my childish nature did years ago.
Yay, thank you so much. What was your inspiration for this?
The mind and how, what a beautiful, complicated thing it is. I actually started writing this after I listened to a line break episode because I like breaking down poetry and I kind of worked backwards almost.
That's so cool. I'm so glad that line break could inspire you.
I spend a lot of time just thinking about writing and trying to make sense of it. So it's nice on Young Writers Project when I can hear other people do that.
So what was the first line in your poem that you thought of, and how did you go from there?
I learned to interpret silence. It was originally going to be just like something about sitting in the quiet, but your mind isn't quiet. You might not talk, but you're always thinking.
Very interesting. There are so many lines in here that I love. I've learned to interpret silence. An ocean cannot freeze. Sometimes I wish it would. What was your inspiration for that section?
An ocean always has moving waters, making it unable to freeze. So how someone's mind doesn't stop, an ocean cannot freeze, but at some point it gets too crazy and you can't think straight. Sometimes I wish an ocean would freeze, like sometimes I wish my mind would just stop occasionally. Let me be in silence for once.
Yeah, I can relate to that a lot. There's just, especially, I know I bring this up in every podcast episode, but especially being a teenager, you know, there's like all these thoughts going on and it's really complicated. And sometimes you're like, just go away and leave me alone. It's really cool how you can compare the mind to the ocean and that concept of like the, you know, endlessness. Because what's so cool to me about water and the ocean, and like, I went through a big underwater phase in my writing. I'm sure if you read my poems on my blog on Writer Repeats, like every poem is underwater. But what was so cool to me was that, you know, if you're at the beach or at a lake or something, you look at the water and you can't see where it ends.
I think water is such a common, like, poetic phrase where people constantly use it because there's so many endless possibilities to use it in.
Yeah, and it's so cool to me. So I really like how you used it in this poem. So another line, do I strive to become another Daphne or let this perplexity lead?
There's a Greek myth with Apollo and Daphne, and I always found this Greek myth kind of depressing as Apollo chased after this person named Daphne romantically, and she does not love him back. And she pleads to the river god to become a tree. And this one was a little funny, in my opinion, because I said, would I rather be a tree or just have my mind stop or, you know, let this endless like buzz of just thinking continue? Sometimes I say, like, I wish I could be a baby again. I wish I could be a dog. So everything would be so simple. But do I? Like, everyone has their mind and they should value it.
That's really cool how you have that mythology aspect to it. I'm actually taking a mythology class right now, and we're learning about Greek mythology, so that's very interesting to me. What's interesting to me about mythology and poetry is that I feel like a lot of the themes can go hand in hand. You know, like a lot of the themes from mythology are universal, and a lot of themes in poetry are universal.
Yeah, I've never seen like a Greek myth or just any mythology without a moral or a theme. So even as absurd as they can be, there's always something kind of hidden beneath their lines.
Yeah, and what's cool is that I was reading about this ancient Greek philosopher. I'm pretty sure he was a philosopher or a writer or something. Yesterday I was reading about him for my mythology class. And apparently his whole theory, I think it's called, I can't remember what it's called, I'll put it in the description or something, but his theory is that there weren't ever myths, and like the creatures and beings and myths were just regular people whose stories were exaggerated over time. Like a big game of telephone, basically, where like just these normal people kept like exaggerating their stories and saying like, oh, they, I don't know, accomplished some great thing. They wrote this great story. And then eventually over time, they became gods. And like, that was his whole theory. And I thought that was really interesting and kind of like cynical, but at the same time, it's definitely something that I want to write about.
Sometimes I wonder if people just created the myths and the gods after there was plenty of things named, such as Athens, if it wasn't named after Athena, but Athena was named after it. Well, nothing maybe that recent, but yeah, exaggerated over time because stories weren't really written down way back then.
Yeah, and I just think it's so cool that like at the time when everyone, like, their lives are very much based on what these like gods tell them to do and like messages that they get from them, and then this guy just comes out and he's like, yeah, they're not real. And I just thought that was so cool that like he could have the like almost the nerve to like tell them that their whole belief system is just like a fantasy, pretty much just like an exaggeration. So in all my reading, I didn't find anything though that said that like, oh, he was exiled or like he was killed for his beliefs or whatever. Like, either people just don't talk about like what they did to him, or like he just got away with it. I don't know, because I feel like someone must have been very upset about this thing that he was telling them.
New beliefs are not very popular, especially when people had their mindset on something.
Well, back to your poem. I live in stacks of books with no more room on the painted bookshelf. I felt like this was totally me. I have some.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I'm drowning in them.
Well, actually, I was redoing my bookshelf because I had too many books that were not on the shelf. But I thought of that line because I'm a reader. All writers read a lot, I think. And I definitely need a bigger bookshelf for all my books.
For sure. Me too. And the last OSNAP open mic, the one in February, we were talking about our books and our bookshelves and like showing each other what our bookshelves look like just at the end for something fun. And I was like, oh, look at mine. It's this big cubby thing. There's 9 cubbies and 25 books in each cubby. So like count how many that is, plus all these hundreds of other books I have. And everyone was like, oh, that's cool, but kind of a problem. So it's so cool to me. I think that books are so amazing and have definitely inspired me to like become a writer, but at the same time it's also deeply something that I have a problem with because I can't let go of books. I can't just say like, oh, I've read it, I've enjoyed it, it's time to move on. I'm always like, I want to keep it, I want to reread it. Even if I don't reread it for another 5 years, I still want it in my room.
Yeah, I noticed you had your profile picture was a quote from The Catcher in the Rye, which I'm reading right now in English class, about how books just knock you out and you want to call up the writer. I feel the exact same way, and I have such a bad, usually I'm a very neat person who likes to just have a refreshment of stuff, like new everything, or just, I don't like to keep a lot of things, but books, I keep all of my books. I have so many books from just like when I was very young.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a hoarder too. I keep everything I have. I mean, I'll use it eventually. At some point, I'll need it and I'll regret getting rid of it. But it's funny that you mentioned my profile picture. I don't know if anyone else on YWP has the same thing, but like I've been on the site for like 4 years now. And I chose that profile picture 4 years ago and I completely forgot about it until now. But yeah, I do really like that quote about I think it was, sometimes I want to read a book where like the author is so good or something. I wish that they were a friend of mine that I could call up or something. Anyway, I really do like that quote. And I feel the same way that like, sometimes when I read a good book, I want to be able to call the author and be like, hey, tell me everything about this. Like, tell me every detail that went on in your mind as you're writing this.
Which leads to just rereading the book if you can't call up the author. And then it just gets obsessive and endless.
Like the ocean. See, it can be described for like so many things. Some more lines. My poems are full of obscure imagery. I seem to be a nomad with a single destination. What was your inspiration for that part?
Just being scatterbrained, and I don't know what I want to do with my life, but I know that I want to, you know, take my writing somewhere. It doesn't need to be my career, just keep having a writing moment. But my single destination is either to write or just to, you know, grow up and have a good life and, you know, live a long, fulfilling life. But I keep going in different directions with everything. It just, you know, and that's, I think that's what life is about. Also, my poems are full of obscure imagery. That was written, especially based on this one poem, I forgot the name of it, but it was written a long time ago, and it was just all descriptive words and language, and it was put together, and it made very little sense, but it was a poem just of random imagery, and I thought that that's like, it was broad and a scatterbrain, but still, you know, appealed to me because that's how my mind was working at the time.
And when you're writing poems, do you ever feel like you're just kind of wandering through them until you get to the real meaning? Because sometimes when I'm writing poems, I feel like I don't start off with a premise or like a real moral of the story. I just kind of see where the poem takes me, and then I'm like, oh, so that's what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. The thing with poems, I used to think you don't need to go back and edit them and you don't need to spend a lot of time with that. You write it. But I mean, that's not what happened with this poem. It took me a while to write. So poems can take you anywhere. I think that's the difference with writing stories, because poems, there's less guidelines. So it's fun. I don't start off with a premise at all. I don't know what this poem was supposed to be about originally, but it wasn't supposed to be about a mind. I think it was supposed to be about, like, water or something.
I used to feel the same way, that, like, I don't have to edit anything. Like, whatever I come out with is just how it's supposed to be. But then I realized that I didn't really like those poems. Like, a week after I wrote them, I'd go back to them and be like, no, I don't like that at all. So I found that I do like to edit them, sometimes a little bit, sometimes a lot. Sometimes it takes me a minute, sometimes it takes me a month, but I feel like it always makes me feel better about my writing in the end. So, some more lines. Iceland engulfs my eyes, mountain arch brows trace my unspoken thoughts, my wind-nipped face slowly softens as the day disappears. Inspiration?
I think it was Hallowed Halos, Hallow Be Thy Name, and also another poem, and I want to say that I remember the name, but I don't. I don't think it was from Young Writers Project, but it was all about their appearance. And in Hallowed Halos, Hallowed Be Thy Name, she talked about what she inherited from her mother's side in her face, her cheekbones. And I looked at my face in the mirror, and when I said Iceland engulfs my eyes, I was so broad and just random, but it was just talking about like Iceland, because I think it's really pretty, Iceland, and like the hot springs and how some of them like have like eye color and my eye color in it, and also mountain arch brows. I have very pointy brows that I inherit from my dad, and everyone makes fun of me for that because of how I raised them. I look very serious. And so I just wrote about that. And my wind-nipped face slowly softens as the day disappears. I don't know where I got that from. I really don't. I just wrote that down. It was random.
That's really cool. I love how you took the lines from Amaryllis's poem and connected them to your life. And I feel like that's a really interesting thing to do with, as a writer, is like be able to taken writing from books or poetry or TV shows or whatnot and transform it or view it from the perspective of like your life and your family and your ancestors and stuff. And that reminded me that my great aunt's, one of my great aunt's relatives is doing a family tree project and figuring out like where our ancestors are from. Very interesting stuff. And my great aunt has like 5 kids and like over 100 great grandkids. So the family tree is going to be huge. It's going to be like an actual tree.
Yeah, over 100. I cannot imagine over 100 people. It's a lot of great grandkids. I definitely think that family is so important. I try to include it in all my poems, but not really actually, but I do think family is important.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, beyond just like caring about your family and all that. I mean, in your writing, your family is like such a cool thing to write about because everyone's family is different, but at the same time, everyone's family is so, so, so similar. And so you can like have really closely connected stories, but also very vastly different stories, you know, of two families. And I sort of write about my family, sort of not. I mean, sometimes they make like surprise cameos in my writing, but I think that it's definitely a place where I get inspiration from just like conversations I have with my family or the relationship between my older brother, my younger brother, and I, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't have a huge immediate family, but I remember going to see my English relatives, or more distant English relatives, and it was so fun because I didn't know who they were. I hadn't met them before.
That is really cool. I've never met anyone from England before. I've also never met anyone from North Dakota, and I had a theory for a while that no one lives in North Dakota because I've never met anyone from North Dakota. But then it turns out my dad does know someone from North Dakota, so my theory was debunked. Proven wrong. There's nothing to it.
Yeah, if no one lived in North Dakota, it could just be some very secret set up by South Dakota or the government. Just another Area 51.
I know. I was going to say that's where the aliens are, North Dakota. Remember all those people, I think it was last year or the year before, who were going to storm like Area 51 and find the aliens?
I definitely remember that. I think that was last summer maybe, or last year. I don't remember.
Was it before pandemic? I don't know. I've lost track of time. That was the funniest thing though. Everything I saw for like a week was just about Area 51 and aliens and like find the aliens.
I don't know how Area 51 was this entire rumor or just storming it. Anyone thought that was a good idea, but you know.
And it's so funny to me too, because like that's all everyone talked about for so long. And then once I actually went there, no one talked about it. Like it just suddenly wasn't a thing. All right, back to your poem. The eerie irony of my unfinished masterpieces goes unspoken. I love the eerie irony part. How did you combine that kind of image for this?
Well, I had this huge writer's block and I posted that on Tiny Writes and people gave me a lot of ideas. And Troublemaker said to write down a bunch of words that you want to use in your writing. And eerie and irony were two words. And I put them together. And it, I don't know why, it made me think of just how, like, just how creepy and scary, but also ironic, how many skeletons or, like, corpses, but that's kind of dark. Of just unfinished places and poetry and writing and stories and just everything. How no one talks about, you know, the things that didn't happen. They only talk about the things that did happen.
That's really interesting. And I feel like that thought kind of circles back to the beginning when you say that, you know, you've learned to interpret silence. And, you know, that saying of like how sometimes silence is louder than words, or like what's unspoken is more powerful than what is spoken. I feel like that's a really interesting concept too.
I know there's, especially when during the summer when Black Lives Matter movement was so at large with the protests before work and school started again, there's a lot of signs that said silence is violence, and that, you know, sometimes what goes unspoken when you don't speak out, that can affect people more than when you do.
Yeah, for sure. I have another question about this line and how you wrote down like these different words. Did you rearrange the words and almost like a magnet poem? Have you seen those where like you have different magnets of different words?
Oh, yeah, I did. I just had a long list of words. A lot of them didn't make it into the poem. Makes sense because like there was like pandemonium and just random stuff that I didn't think I'd be able to put in a sentence. But I think, yeah, it definitely, eerie irony was not supposed to go together at first, and then I put it together and I was very happy with myself.
Another line, deja vu is some form of manifestation for me. This is really cool to me because I'm reading about deja vu and manifestation for my science and spirituality class. It's a very interesting concept, but how did you kind of combine that?
Again, both two words of the list, but you take very interesting classes. I'm in middle school, so I still take mostly just staple subjects. But I feel like there are so many times, especially where I just think that I've seen something or like I heard the exact same conversation again, and I'm like, sometimes I guess what happens next, or like I'll just think that this is a sign, this is like, you know, I don't know why. I don't believe in superstitions a lot, but it's, I don't know, deja vu is kind of fun to me.
That's really cool because my whole book that I'm reading for my class is about how there basically is no such thing as a coincidence. And like, not just everything happens for a reason, but like every little thing in your life is caused by like some quantum universal thing or whatever. I don't really understand that. As soon as they said quantum, I was like, no, I'm out of here. But it was like these things called synchronicities, which is like kind of another word for coincidences, where like, you know, deja vu, or like you predict something that happens, or you read something or have a conversation and you're like, oh, I've said this or heard this before. And that's supposed to have some sort of greater meaning. And it's also supposed to like connect you to the universe in some way. I'm a little bit iffy about it, but I think it's interesting.
Yeah, that definitely sounds interesting. I think the mind is too complicated. I'm just going to stop at this poem and, you know, maybe I'll learn about it, but I definitely won't be teaching anyone about how the mind works because I don't know at all.
Me neither. It's too complicated and you have all these people saying all these different things and it's like, what? At the end of the day, what? So another line, I watch an amusement over coffee and scribbled shopping lists.
I don't know why, but I feel like deja vu, it's not like this exact scene, but I don't know why I think of deja vu, but when I do, it connects to this scene where I'm watching my dad and my sister fight over bagels, and like across the table there's like coffee and like scribbled shopping lists, because I don't know, maybe it just happens too often, but it's really like vivid for me for some reason when I think of deja vu. So I just described that.
That's really interesting. I like that when you think of deja vu, you think of a particular moment. Another line, every night I fall asleep to the rattle of the subway and the skeletal murmur of the city. This is so cool to me. How did you kind of come up with that?
I don't know, except I live near the subway. So when I'm unmuted in class and my window's open, people would be like, are you in a helicopter right now? Can we go somewhere? I'm just like, no, I'm in my room. I have the subway always near me. So the subway keeps me company, you know, subway's my friend. And I fall asleep to that. And also the skeletal murmur, I don't really know what that was about. New York is supposed to be the city that never sleeps. And so I just, like, I'm going to sleep, but it's always going to be awake. And somehow, like, the kind of whisper or sounds of the city, it got me thinking to, like, skeletal murmur.
That's a really interesting concept that, like, individuals can go to sleep, but the city itself is always awake, like, always an insomniac or something. That's pretty cool. I was just talking about New York City. This is another thing I talk about a lot. I don't know why, but I went to New York City once, like 3 years ago, and I talk about it all the time, but I went to Times Square, and it was the most amazing thing ever. I was like, no way, there are this many people in the world in, like, one place. It was so cool. And I went on the subway. I almost fell on someone's lap, like, multiple times. And it was so cool, though, because, like, I've never been in the subway, and there's, like, no equivalent in Vermont, you know? There isn't anywhere like that. There really isn't a big, like, public transportation thing either. Like, there are buses, but I don't really live near any bus stop unless you're in, like, Burlington. But my point is that when you're, like, in the subway itself, like, it goes so fast, and, like, it's like being in an airplane, sort of, but, like, underground, where, like, you can't see the exact details of the scenery, but you know that you're moving.
It's sometimes still scary to me, even though I have to take it to go to school. But I remember my fourth grade teacher telling us, we were, like, going to a field trip, we were taking the subway, and she said, if you're standing up, grip onto the pole very tightly and don't let go until we stop, or sit down, because I don't want you guys falling into people's lap and people thinking we're, you know, juvenile delinquents. Like, just be cool. And it's just so crazy how people, like, in the city, even though I consider myself part of the city life, people just, like, can fall asleep on it. I'm just like, how do you do that?
I know, me too. I didn't see anyone, like, really weird on the subway. Apparently there are, like, very weird people, but I didn't. But yeah, I definitely almost fell on top of some people. I had to, like, grab the pole, and I was like, ah! It was funny, though. It was a fun experience overall, just, like, being somewhere that I've never been, and, like, all these people around you, like you said, I mean, that's something that you do, like, almost every day, or, like, you're so used to it by now that it's almost, like, it doesn't even faze you. But for me, and, like, someone who's never seen something like that, it's, like, this magical, incredible thing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with me whenever I either, like, have gone skiing or something. People, it amazes me how people do this sometimes once a week in the winter. My cousins do. And skiing is such a treat because you have to, like, you have to drive all the way up there and you have to rent skis and stuff. But I bet people in Vermont can just go skiing when it's cold and wintery.
There are all these little breaks throughout the school year in Vermont. This might be in New York too, specifically for skiing. And there are some schools where, like, they get one day off every week just so they can go skiing. Like, it's a big part of the Vermont culture. I don't know why. I've never been skiing. Maybe I'm not a true Vermonter, but it kind of freaks me out, like, that whole concept of just, like, going down a hill of ice and snow and, like, expecting to not fall. I don't get how people do that. I'm just very clumsy, though, so maybe it's a me thing.
My friend recently moved to Switzerland, and she told me on the phone, she says, Sophie, February break is called skiing break here because people just go skiing all the time, and it's longer, and it just, like, they just call it skiing break, and sometimes they get, like, longer weekends to just go skiing.
That's so cool. All right, well, you're ending, and I rear the day when impulse will leave me just as my childish nature did years ago.
This is way exaggerated. My childish nature did not leave me, and I will not rue the day, I don't think, when impulse will leave me, because I'm not sure if that will happen. But I'm thinking, like, how my mind matures, and just how if I'm growing up too fast, especially in COVID, all children are at this point, because children aren't supposed to go through a world pandemic. I mean, no one is really, but it made me think, like, am I too mature? Like, am I growing up? Like, has my childish nature left me? And I was scared that it was kind of a moment of exaggeration and panic at that time, but I was scared if impulse, like, if I wouldn't have a desire to act before I thought anything through for a long time.
I feel the same way about, like, am I just so much more mature than everyone else? Like, did I grow up faster than everyone else? Because I started college when I was 16. I'm 17 now, so I'm halfway through my college degree already. And it's crazy to me because it's, like, I feel like my life is so different from, like, the other people my age. Like, my friends who go to high school here, I feel like we're just on such different levels. And, like, that's not me saying, like, I'm better than everyone else. But, like, our goals and, like, what's important to us is so different. Like, they're focused on going to Starbucks. I mean, like, yeah, I am too. But at the same time, like, I'm also focused on, you know, keeping my GPA up and, like, being involved in my honor society and graduating with honors. And, like, that's my big goal right now. Whereas I feel like they're very, like, short-term goals. And so, yeah, I definitely feel like I grew up really fast in the pandemic, because before, in like February-ish, I was thinking to myself, oh, I'm gonna take like one class at the college, I'm gonna get my license, I'm gonna drive there, it's gonna be really cool, hang out with my friends at the mall. And then, you know, the whole pandemic happened and I was like, yeah, no, none of that's happening. I'm going to do like online classes all at college, I'm not getting my license, I'm not going to the mall with my friends. And it was just so, like, such a 180.
I have a second cousin, and she, I think she skipped two grades too or something, or one grade. And so she, this was her first year of college, and it was, she got to go on campus because they had this, like, little, like, bubble of just, it was really this interesting thing how the college was so responsible with it. But all of her classes were online, and she got the entire dorm to herself because of COVID. And so she hated it because all of her classes were online and they were shorter and she couldn't like have the full college experience that she's been wanting for years.
Yeah, I mean, I actually did take one class in person, but we only met like five times throughout the semester. It was for ceramics though, so it was kind of like, it felt more like an art class than like a college class. But yeah, I did kind of feel like if the whole pandemic wasn't here and like I could go to all my classes in person, like would I be a completely different person? Like would I change even more? I don't know. Who's to say?
I'm in seventh grade, and people say that seventh grade, besides college, is of course the worst because, you know, that's where your grades start counting and stuff. And just so I was really worried, and then all my classes were online except for a couple days in person. So it hasn't been the normal seventh grade experience. I won't be able to tell other people, oh, seventh grade's the worst, because I won't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was homeschooled for seventh grade. So, like, I was homeschooled my whole life, but I wasn't, like, you know, involved in, like, the normal drama. But I did still have drama, like, these friends who suddenly had boyfriends and these friends who suddenly were into alcohol and, like, sneaking alcohol across the border into Montreal in seventh grade and eighth grade. Like, I know, pretty crazy stuff. And that was another time when I felt like this is just, these are not people that I'm the same age as. Like, these are totally different people. But seventh grade is kind of whack. I mean, I want to say that, like, it's great, it's fantastic, everyone's gonna love it. But the honest truth is that there's a lot of stuff going on. And you really have to just say that that's not going to affect me. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and move on. You know, I'm not going to get involved in drama. I'm going to keep writing. I'm going to keep doing things that I like with my family and on my own and with my friends, and like focus on that rather than like, oh my gosh, there's so much weird stuff going on.
Good for you, because fifth grade, I remember there was a lot of drama. There was just, and so that's my seventh grade. Fifth grade was my seventh grade. They seemed as if they were acting older people being immature. And I seemed like I was younger, but acting more mature. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but I seemed more innocent, but mature. And they seemed more not innocent and immature. We learned a lot from then, and we got into middle school. And then the pandemic happened. So we've all learned quite a bit. And grown up through this entire crazy, crazy year.
I second that. All right, some more questions about writing. How did you first get involved with writing and interested in that?
I remember opening a Maya Angelou biography for my birthday, and I had no clue who she was. And then I read the biography. I became obsessed with her. Whenever there was a school project about a person to like write a biography, it would be her. It was always just like about Maya Angelou. And then I started looking at her poems, and then I started writing stories. They weren't very good, but I was really into realistic fiction, short stories and stuff. And then I got more into poetry and more like just random absurd stories. It kind of all started with this Maya Angelou biography. But when I found Young Writers Project, I was actually in Sugarbush, and we were skiing, you know, our one ski trip of the year, and my aunt can't ski because of her. She has a problem with her knee or something, so she went it was a snow motorcycle pretty much. I have no clue. She's very cool, and she picked up this newspaper, and the back was Young Writers Project, and it was a bunch of poems, and so I ripped the page out, and I still have it, actually. It's totally, like, gross and torn and stuff, and I signed up, and that was 2 years ago. I don't know.
That's so cool. I love that you still have that newspaper. That's such an interesting story. I had a similar experience. I also found YWP through the newspaper, which is so interesting to me because I feel like no one really reads the newspaper, or not very many people read the newspaper. So it's fun that like we both discovered writing pretty much through the newspaper. You mentioned Maya Angelou, and I really love her writing. I love all of her poems, just amazing. What other books and authors have shaped you as a writer and just as a human being?
A lot of Young Writers Project writers, they've been really inspirational, especially when you wrote January. I forgot to tell you, but the skeletal murmur came from the phrase, the inelegant purr of my typewriter. So that's kind of, they connected somehow. I don't really know. It inspired something. And also, I love just like classic books for the way that they're written, because there's not a whole lot of classics that are like enthralling, like fantasy or mystery books. So I like more recent like mystery books, but classic books for not only the way they're written, but the morals and everything. And yeah, that's where a lot of my inspiration comes from.
I'm so glad that you're inspired by my poem. That means so much to me. It makes me so happy when people say that, like, oh, I loved your poem, or oh, it inspired me. It's like, oh, that's so cool. But yeah, I feel the same way. I am sort of like torn on whether or not I like audiobooks. This has to do with my, like, what I'm talking about. This isn't just random. But because I don't like ebooks, I think that they're wrong. There's something weird about them and iffy. But I do like audiobooks because I'm starting to listen to Pride and Prejudice. I think I'm on like chapter 7 on Spotify, actually. And I kind of like it because I feel like I wouldn't have the patience to just like sit and read it, because sometimes like old books like that kind of lose my attention. But at the same time, I feel like I'm missing out on a lot of it because I'm not like paying attention word for word. But yeah, old books have such good stories. I mean, writers back in, you know, the 20th century, they weren't trying to like, you know, put on a show or like do gimmicky stuff like a lot of writers are now. You know, there aren't like all these mass market paperback books probably. So yeah, old writers, old books, all of that stuff really inspires me.
I think I read Pride and Prejudice recently, like I think a year ago, maybe half a year ago. But I remember before I tried to start in like fifth grade, and I told my grandma, this is so boring. How did you read this? Like, I don't understand a thing about this. And she said, oh, are you kidding? It's amazing. And then my grandpa was like, no, it's boring. It's all just about marriage and stuff. And so I powered through like half a year ago, and I really liked it. But again, starting books, it's not so fun because it's slow at first.
Yeah, I feel that way about a lot of books. I mean, books that I read for school and just on my own, like, sometimes it's really difficult to get through them, and sometimes I'm like, I just have to give up on this. But someone said, I can't remember who this was, but I read this a few times, that you're not supposed to, but like it's a good idea to try to at least read the first 100 pages of a book before like giving it up the first 5 pages or 10 pages or whatever, and try to get at least 50 or 100 pages in, and then decide, is it worth it, or like should I just skip the rest of it?
I am such a perfectionist. I hate leaving books halfway read, or it depends how. So I try to like power through them, and then eventually I'll get super bored and then put it back on my bookshelf. It's this endless cycle all over again, like an ocean, as we've established before. So yeah, that's good advice, just to go. Like, if you really don't like it, just drop it. Because I've been trying to do that more recently, just drop the books that I don't like.
And I have a few more questions. I actually saw this question online and I thought it was kind of interesting. And this is kind of like a science fiction question. So if in 150 years, science just doesn't help us, the world is destroyed, the only thing that's left is a book about your life, what would the title of the book be, and what would the blurb on the back say about you?
I mean, I don't think it has to be super intriguing because it's the last book ever and the world isn't working anymore, but if so, it would probably be, that's a good question. I wanted to write a memoir a bit ago and it was called What Nature Gives Me, but that was after the death of my grandfather and also this great-grandfather beech tree, and I like it was this like symbolism thing, and so I was really set on writing that memoir, and then so maybe it would be What Nature Gives Me, but I don't know how relevant that would be. Maybe it would just be something about, you know, a key moment in my life that really just like, it could be called deja vu or manifestation or something, who knows.
Eerie irony, who knows? That would be cool. I don't know what mine would be. I mean, hopefully the world doesn't end too quickly and I have some more time to do things, but you know Milhouse from The Simpsons? For a while, my first semester of college, I was like, these bad things would happen and then semi-good things would happen right after, and I'd say, everything is coming up, Milhouse, and that became like my catchphrase for a while, and I feel like that kind of sums up my life. Pretty much really bad things happen and then semi-good things happen and I'm really optimistic about it. So yeah, maybe that would be the title. What is the main source of inspiration for your writing?
It's usually, I think, negative feelings, because you feel those sometimes a lot more than positive feelings, which is kind of sad. Negative things stand out to you more than positive things. But also, if there's something just really beautiful, like a scene or just a lifestyle, like I remember writing a poem called like A Gardener or The Gardener, and it was about how like they take care of plants or whatever, and it was just like, because I thought it was such a beautiful profession to like be able to do that, so that's negative thoughts are just something that I find really beautiful. That's like where most of my poetry is from, pretty much.
That's really cool. Now, one last question. We talked about how you found out about YWP, and what role does it play in your life?
I try to check it every day, but I don't. I'm not very good with, you know, stuff in general, but also with checking stuff or, you know, staying on the same track. So I think my parents would never let me have social media, which makes sense because, you know, sometimes it's not healthy, but it's like the closest thing I've ever had to social media, like online friends and just a bunch of, except it's all supportive and it's also sweet and we all share like this love for writing, and it has impacted me so much, especially with self-esteem and how, especially with writing, it influences me to write more because, you know, people will hear my writing. It's out there somewhere, which it's not just for me to recite for my family or something. So it shows me a goal in mind, which is, yeah, what I strive for.
That's so cool. I'm so glad that YWP can have that kind of role for you and support you, make you feel welcomed. Yeah, I completely agree with all that. It's definitely helped me feel more comfortable, like, knowing that people are reading my poetry, and it's not just something that, like, I write in a notebook and I close the notebook and that's it, and, like, no one knows about it. It definitely helps me with, like, sharing my thoughts too, and not being afraid to, like, share my opinion on things. Well, with that being said, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm so glad that we get to talk today.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
I'm so glad. This has been episode 34 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed and stay tuned for episode 35. Bye!